Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a video in which Grady McMurtry explains why he thinks creation and evolution should both get equal time in the classroom. So let's take a peek.
Today in the United States, evolution is being taught only, as it is also in the United Kingdom and Brazil or Russia or South Africa or Japan.
I assume that when you say being taught only, you are referring specifically to biology class. And really, when looking at the various subjects touched on in high school biology classes, although many of the subjects can be taught without seeming to mention evolution, they tend to make the most sense in light of evolution. As Theodosius Dobzhansky, the prominent geneticist, evolutionary biologist, and devout Christian, said in his essay titled "Nothing in Biology Makes Sense Except in Light of Evolution," organisms now living are successful descendants of only a minority of species that lived in the past, and of smaller and smaller minorities the farther back you look. Nevertheless, the number of living species has not dwindled. Indeed, it has probably grown with time. All this is understandable in the light of evolution theory, but what a senseless operation it would have been on God's part to fabricate a multitude of species ex nihilo and then let most of them die out. So, yeah, you can teach a good deal of biology without mentioning evolution, but evolution as a theory is what ties everything together into a comprehensive whole. Nothing else even comes close to this.
Now, this is actually anti-education, because to have a good educational technique, to have critical thinking, you have to teach both sides of the issue.
When there are two sides, I agree. In fact, there is actually a specific scientific methodology called analysis of competing hypotheses, and there's even some criticism going around in evolutionary biology for the failure to use this methodology. A random sampling of studies dealing with ecology and evolution identified only 21 out of 100 studies that examined more than one hypothesis, with only 8 examining more than two. But I think the problem that Grady has here is one of scope. You see, even though only 21 of these studies examined multiple hypotheses, I can guarantee that all of the hypotheses examined would be different takes on how evolution did its thing. Because at this point, while there are many different hypotheses about how things work in an evolutionary framework, evolution itself is so well established as to be considered a scientific fact. Nothing has even come close to having the explanatory power for what we observe in biology as evolution does, to the point where even evolution-denying creationists have to incorporate evolution into their ideas in order to make them work, often to a much greater extent than evolutionary biologists, as is evidenced by the extremely rapid rate of evolution that would be necessary to go from the species that creationists claim were all on the ark to the number of species that are alive today.
And allow the student to decide for themselves which one they will believe.
Okay, Grady, would you then approve of a world religions class where students are taught about several of the religions from around the world, taught the apologetics for all these religions, and taught the non-religious responses to all of the various apologetics in an effort to let the student decide for themselves? Or would you prefer to train up a child in the way that you think they should go so that when they are older they will not depart from it? I guess my real question here is, why are you advocating for a teaching style that is explicitly anti-biblical? I mean, sure, I'm perfectly fine with these sorts of things when they are warranted, but you claim to follow a book that literally tells you not to teach that way.
Now, I do not want to see a government agency, a secular government, teaching biblical creation.
Neither do I. Glad we can agree. So let's just stick with actual science and move on then, shall we?
That's not the job of the government. That's the job of the family.
Well, no, I would suggest that the job of a family is to make sure their children are capable of making it out in the real world. And in the real world, we know that evolution happens. So depending on what your kids decide they want to do for a living when they're older, it can save them some pretty massive headaches to not teach them misinformation as truth when they're younger. I mean, after the year we've had, I think most of us can appreciate the importance of some basic science literacy, even among the non-scientific population. Insistence on accepting ideas as truth based solely on the authority of people who claim to speak for God, and rejecting the scientific consensus when there is a perception of disagreement between what scientists are saying and what religious leaders are saying, has always had the potential to cause problems up to and including death, but this year we really saw the consequences of such thinking. COVID-19 cases have been linked to church gatherings all over the place, with some of the worst offenders having over 200 cases linked to a single church, and not an insignificant death toll. And yet you still have preachers preaching about how God is going to protect them from the virus. How many times has Kenneth Copeland banished it or offered immunity from it?
I demand a vaccination to come immediately.
Yes.
And continue to hold live church services despite the fact that none of his efforts have been successful. My point is, priming people to believe things based solely on authority without evidence backing it up is demonstrably harmful, now more than ever. So, no, it is not the family's job to make sure that their kids know that science is wrong. It is their job to make sure their kids get a proper education that will help them develop their science literacy. And unfortunately for young Earth creationists, science literacy doesn't really pair well with it.
And of the church.
The church should just keep its nose out of education, especially considering the various churches and their reputations surrounding how they treat children.
However, when we teach only one side of an issue, that's intellectual bigotry.
Not when there really is only one side. Is it intellectual bigotry to not teach flat Earth alongside the spherical Earth? Should classrooms have a globe and whatever the flat Earth equivalent of a globe is? Or is there maybe enough evidence to justify the shunning of such models from classroom settings? And would creationists, who often scoff at flat earthers in much the same way as people like me scoff at them, appreciate the statement that children should be taught about the flat earth by their families and churches? I don't think so. Now, try to reimagine this scenario from a new perspective. The rest of the scientific world views creationists in the same way as creationists view flat earthers, and the evidence for flat earth and creationism is roughly equivalent. So keep that in mind when you advocate for this both sides style teaching.
So I have one of three solutions. Number one, if you're going to teach evolution only, what we should do is we should teach more than we do, because if you taught everything there was to know about evolution, nobody would believe it.
Firstly, there is nowhere near enough time for teachers to focus on one specific aspect of biology. That's why after high school, if a student wants to continue studying science, they have to specialize. You don't just take biology in college or university, you would start to specialize, and ecology and evolution is one common area of specialization. An understanding of evolution will be necessary for any biology course, which is why you start with a general overview in high school, but to teach all the details that we know about evolution fully would require multiple PhD level courses. Having this expectation of high school children is simply unreasonable and unrealistic. Secondly, such a detailed teaching of evolution would most definitely lead to a much higher acceptance of evolution than is currently common. So if it were not so unreasonable and unrealistic, I would be behind this one 100%. But Grady, I've seen your various presentations on evolution. You seem to have an understanding of the subject that might not even get you through high school today. So trust me when I say that I fully support any effort to actually bring you up to speed on the subject.
You see, they only teach what makes them look good. They never show you what makes them look bad.
That's creationist projection. What is taught in schools is our current understanding with essentially no regard for optics. Creationists, though, will latch onto individual pieces of science that can be made to look damning if you don't fully understand them, and then make an effort to promote the misunderstanding in an effort to make evolution look bad.
But if you taught everything there was to know about evolution, nobody would believe it.
So, this dude has a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry management and possibly a master's degree in the same, though I haven't been able to confirm the subject for his master's degree, I'm just assuming it continued in the same subject. So, while this subject would not require as in-depth an understanding of evolution as, say, an evolutionary biologist, it should at least give him enough of an understanding of science in general to know that it is impossible for any one person to know everything about a specific subject. As such, it is also impossible for all students to be taught everything there is to know about the subject, especially at the general high school level. And the implication here is that he knows enough about evolution to know better than to believe evolution, which in his case is, I think, an excellent example of the spike on the left-hand side of the Dunning-Kruger graph.
Or, number two, and the one I prefer, is that we would teach evolution and creation scientifically only.
Okay, so if we're teaching them scientifically only, what mechanisms would be taught about creation? This is where you run into a catch-22. If we're sticking to science, then there has to be explanations for specific phenomena. In creationism, often the explanation is God did it, which isn't really an explanation. Unless you can describe the mechanisms at play, it amounts to nothing more than an appeal to magic. It doesn't help matters that there isn't a single secular group of young Earth creationists who were just convinced by the overwhelming evidence. Every single group is religiously motivated. Now, sure, the Discovery Institute likes to pretend that they arrived at their conclusions secularly, but they rely entirely on religiously motivated contributors and keeping their exact thoughts on the age of the Earth pretty vague, so that respected scientists like James Tour, who actually does good work at his lab at Rice University, can associate with them without it tarnishing their reputation too much. Though, to be fair, although Dr. Tour has appeared in their propaganda pieces, pontificating on all the areas of abiogenesis that we don't understand yet, as though our lack of understanding is automatically a case for intelligent design, on his official website, he makes sure to distance himself from the ID movement with the statement, "I have been labeled as an intelligent design, sometimes called ID, proponent. I am not. I do not know how to use science to prove intelligent design, although some others might. I am sympathetic to the arguments and I find some of them intriguing, but I prefer to be free of that intelligent design label. As a modern day scientist, I do not know how to prove intelligent design using my most sophisticated analytical tools. The canonical tools are, by their own admission, inadequate to answer the intelligent design question. I cannot lay the issue at the doorstep of a benevolent creator or even an impersonal intelligent designer. All I can presently say is that my chemical tools do not permit my assessment of intelligent design." So, at least when the Discovery Institute doesn't have their cameras rolling, he is willing to admit that his statements don't actually point to intelligent design. He's just pointing out things that he thinks is impossible for us to explain, which would simply amount to a God of the Gaps argument, but with his admission that he can't provide evidence or even test the intelligent design hypothesis, his statements don't even rise to the level of the God of the Gaps, instead remaining at the "I'm just asking questions" level. All this to say, you can't teach creation scientifically because there is no scientific evidence for creation. It is all dependent on our lack of understanding of certain scientific areas and an attempt to poke holes in some of our understandings of other areas.
In the public schools, no Bible, no religious document of any kind.
Grady, I think you should have a chat with Dr. Jason Lyle, because you seem to be falling into his pretended neutrality fallacy. You know, that's the one where you pretend to be neutral when you actually can't be neutral? I mean, sure, it's not a real fallacy, and while it probably is impossible for a human being to be actually perfectly neutral on a subject, an attempt at neutrality is not fallacious. But here's a creationist pretending that their creationist conclusions don't rely on their religious beliefs, and stating that we could arrive at the creationist conclusion without the Bible. But how would you do that? The closest thing to evidence for creationism that I have ever heard is an appeal to information in genetics, and this appeal falls apart pretty quickly when examined, but it does have a certain superficially satisfying feeling to it.
And simply do a balanced treatment, showing the science for both sides, and allow the student to decide for themselves.
And if we do that, if we actually give it a balanced treatment, then we end up with what is supposed to be taught in schools today. Just evolution, no creation. Because there is no evidence that actually points to creation. It relies pretty exclusively on attempting to poke holes in the evidence for evolution, as though if you could somehow prove evolution wrong, then creation wins by default.
Default! Woohoo! The two sweetest words in the English language. Default, default, default.
But that's simply not the case. If a creationist someday manages to successfully falsify evolution, then that would turn all of biology on its head, and this person would likely win a Nobel Prize in relatively short order. But that doesn't automatically prove creation right. You still need to present a case that points to creation as the best explanation for the observed facts. And unfortunately for creationists, creationism usually boils down to what amounts to magic with the explanation God did it. And such an explanation is really no explanation at all. So even if we throw out evolution, creationism does not adequately explain the facts. You need to work out the mechanisms that God would have used to do the creating before it will even begin to be viable.
That's actually the best form of teaching about the question of origins. Where did we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? How should we behave while we're here?
Why are we here? Where are we going? And how should we behave while we are here are largely irrelevant to evolution. And debatably, they're not even questions that science attempts to answer. I mean, where are we going could be a scientific question depending on what you mean by it, but when studying biology, where are we going is speculation at best. The formation of these questions when discussing the proper way to teach biology exposes your complete lack of understanding of the subject matter, or even of science education in general.
Now, of course, the third would be, again, I think a very good one, don't teach anything about creation or evolution.
Because ignorance is bliss, I guess? Again, quite telling that one of the solutions that you think is a good one is to keep kids ignorant of the subject. Well, I'm sorry, but this option is just, for lack of a better word, stupid.
Just teach factual science.
Well, I'm gonna have to disagree that evolution is not factual. It is. But I'm glad we can at least both agree that creationism is not factual science. Thanks!
Just teach. This is the first law. This is the second law of thermodynamics. This is the law of gravity.
Why would they be teaching gravity and thermodynamics in biology class?
This is how genetics works.
That one is pretty much impossible to teach without also teaching evolution, because genetics are very closely linked with evolution.
And by doing so, and having nothing to do with the question of origins, but simply the facts of science, we would have a far superior education system, and our students would have a far better grasp of science.
No, you are literally advocating for keeping kids ignorant on a well-understood scientific topic. Keeping kids ignorant does not give them a better grasp on the matter. I know 1984 references were kind of overdone this past year, but does this not perfectly encompass the ignorance is strength line? The purpose of that line was to point out that the ruling class is better able to maintain control over the population if the population remains ignorant. The more they learn, the harder they are to control. And you would have a very hard time indeed convincing me that creationists are not interested in controlling people's lives. Otherwise, they wouldn't so often be the same people preaching against homosexuality, or sex before marriage, or how often you should attend services, or how much of your income you should give to them, etc. Churches like to control their parishioners, is what I'm getting at, and having an ignorant congregation helps with that. And that's basically it here. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Jesse Turner, who says, "You know, I'm a little bit embarrassed, but for about 3 months I thought you were saying wet Jesus, not what Jesus. And my immature mind thought, and why is he wet? If it's the rhino, it must be the horn." Okay, I'm sorry if I'm broadcasting your embarrassment, but this legitimately made me laugh. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, what Jesus, and all the rest, who are the ignorance that is the strength of my channel. If you'd like to be a creationist educational plan, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time! Wait a sec, hold on a second, don't roll the credits yet. You thought you were done early today, did you? Nah, this video was short enough that I thought I'd give you a bonus mini Powell. He uploaded a video where he's trying to demonstrate that everything he says is backed up by science.
Every single scientific statement that I've said or ever will say will be based on at least one or two peer-reviewed papers, at least.
I'm just gonna play and respond to a small section of it.
And they were wondering, since we supposedly evolved from monkeys, how we got facial hair, or how we ended up having facial hair that grows out down here. Evolution literally teaches that our face and that our hair was created as a cushion, and that we were actually punched to the point where natural selection had to create a cushion in our face.
Yes, Matt, that is one hypothesis for where the beard came from. It is by no means conclusive, but it is one hypothesis. And it makes sense. I can tell you from my experience with three kids and having no beard and also having my current almost but not quite Hagrid style beard, the bigger, poofier beard definitely cushions a blow better than a trimmed beard or being clean shaven.
And he's saying, in this day and age, with all the information and Google, the idea that people would believe evolution, like, it's like 180 degrees opposite.
So, as far as I can tell, the main point of this video is to say that people call him a liar, but when you search for what he says, it turns out to be true. Here's the thing, though. Nobody is saying that he was lying about the existence of a study that suggested beards are a protection against fighting. Nobody is saying he was lying about the existence of headlines saying monkeys surfed. What we're saying is that he is lying about the content and the context. For the beard thing, in context, it is one study. The answer to the question of why beards exist is still, we don't know. The punching thing is one hypothesis that has not been verified to the point where it has become consensus. So no, evolutionists do not believe that that is where beards come from. Some evolutionists are of the opinion that it is a plausible explanation. Nothing more. As to the surfing monkeys thing, yes, there have been headlines to that effect. But I challenge you, Matt Powell, to find a single peer-reviewed paper that uses the word surf to describe how the monkeys cross the ocean. You won't find it because it doesn't exist. We know there is a problem with headlines misrepresenting the science. This doesn't mean that you are not also misrepresenting the science when you present the headlines as though it is something that all evolutionists must dogmatically accept, because the science says so. Rafting isn't even the only hypothesis, it's just the prevalent hypothesis. But you wouldn't know that because you didn't go any farther than the popular science news outlets that were just looking for clicks.
You and people who deny evolution are complete and utter idiots.
Okay, for those of you listening without watching, what he's doing is just Googling the various headlines that he used to make his movie and showing that they are real headlines, as though that proves that he's telling the truth about his insistence that all evolutionists have to believe these things the way he presents it, which, I might add, is usually him misrepresenting what the headlines are even saying, with the headlines misrepresenting what the science is actually saying. So it's a misrepresentation on top of a misrepresentation. But anywho, he just highlighted the first sentence of an article with a headline about monkeys surfing, and it says, "Long ago, about 36 million years before today, a raft of monkeys found themselves adrift in the Atlantic." I still don't like the phrasing, but raft and surfing are obviously not the same thing, and the word surf was used purely to generate clicks. And yet, in Matt's movie, he repeatedly latched onto the word surf to make it sound much more ridiculous than it actually is. Now, what is it called when you misrepresent something knowing that you are in fact misrepresenting it? That's called lying. Fun fact, the study that this is all based on barely even touches on the rafting aspect. Most of it is focused on how they know the fossils they found are from old world monkeys rather than new world monkeys, with rafting getting a passing mention toward the end of the study, while citing an earlier study from the 90s about floating vegetation islands being a plausible mechanism for transport. And that study also doesn't use the word surf even once. Now, that's all I'm covering of that. I just thought it was funny that he thinks that showing us that there are popular news headlines that say some of the same words that he said somehow means that he wasn't misrepresenting or lying about them. But I didn't want to make a whole video just on that one pathetic little snippet. So, roll credits for realsies now!